Hello and welcome to the first hour discussion of Nationwide with me, Sunny Martin. This evening, we are going to be hosting the United Kingdom Ambassador to South Sudan, David Ashley, who is going to be sharing with us his recent official visit to Rumbek Lakes State, where he interacted with senior government officials, cattle keepers, about their initiative of Peace Building Opportunity Fund that is aimed at reducing violence in Lakes State. And also, he'll be sharing with us his views about the implementation of the Revitalized Peace Agreement of 2018. Please remember, this is a recorded interview. Do not call, as your calls will not be answered. Thank you so much, Ambassador, for making your time to come and speak to the people of South Sudan through Radio Mirror. You are most welcome.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yes, we understand that you were on an official trip to Lakes State. Could you tell us what was the purpose of your visit to Lakes State?
Yeah, so I spent 3 days in and around Rumbek last week. My first proper visit outside Juba, and it was great to get out and have a chance to engage with many more South Sudanese. So the principal purpose was to look at a program we were supporting through POF, which is a Peace Building Opportunities Fund, and specifically Peace Canal, which is a South Sudanese NGO which we have supported. And the program has been about trying to reduce violence in Lake State, particularly relating to cattle camps, cattle raiding, and so on. So a very positive visit, I have to say. There are lots of news in South Sudan which sometimes is not so positive, and it was very good to see a good news story in terms of a program which had made a real difference to people's lives. The people we spoke to talked about how the level of violence had reduced significantly. Therefore, they were able to move around much more freely, including with their cattle. There was not the same sense of fear and trepidation in doing so, and therefore they were able to go about their lives, go and develop their livelihoods in a much more secure environment. So it was good to see.
Okay, in your own view, as somebody investing a lot of the UK money in this POF, the Peace Building Opportunity Fund, to what extent do you think this initiative have led to some extent peaceful coexistence among the people of Lake State?
So obviously, it was a short visit, 3 days, and so I'm reliant on what people said. So we met with cattle herders, we met with women who were involved in the program as Bridges for Peace. We met with a number of the paramount chiefs. We met with the state government, including the state minister for peace building, and others. And the impression that they gave universally was that the program had been very impactful in terms of reducing the levels of violence. And that was through various means. It was partly about fostering reconciliation between the previously warring communities who live in and around Rumbek, the three districts around Rumbek. Part of it was about building opportunities for peaceful coexistence, so through things like peace farms, and some of it was in terms of supporting other mechanisms for people to live together, to work together, to thrive together, and there was very powerful evidence of reconciliation among people who had previously been directly fighting against each other, which was good to see.
So is there any timeline for this project?
So this is currently a continuing project. We were discussing about the future of it, both in lakes and potentially elsewhere. That's, you know, decisions have yet to be made, but we have been doing it for the past 5 years, and clearly we have seen some positive results.
Okay. And before we move on, some of our listeners will be saying, why Lake State? We have same violence going on in Warap, same in Jongle, and same in some parts of the country. Why don't you also do the same initiative in these areas?
So we are, the Peace Canal are also operating in Jongle and in Pibor. It is clear that when the program started, Lakes was one of the worst in terms of this kind of violence. Thankfully, that's no longer the case, but there remains challenges. We will look to see whether or not it's possible to expand elsewhere. We are aware that, very sadly, violence of different kinds remains a factor of life in many parts of South Sudan. And so the need for peace building, whether supported by the UK or by others, remains significant.
On the 6th of last month, the UK government, together with other international partners, issued a joint statement expressing concern about the ongoing conflict and the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. Could you outline some of the key concerns raised in that statement and why they are important at this stage of the peace process in South Sudan?
We issued the statement because we have seen a further decline in the security situation over the recent months. I arrived in Juba in January, and since then we're now seeing regular fighting between forces aligned to SPLMIG and SPLMIO now in several states, including, you know, Western Equatoria, Central Equatoria, in Upper Nile, to some extent in Jongle, in other places as well. That is new, and that is deeply concerning. There were many concerns relating to the implementation of the peace agreement in recent years, but one thing which we had been able to see was that the overall nationwide ceasefire had largely held, and very sadly that's no longer the case, and that was the principal reason for issuing the statement now, to say to both major parties and to all the stakeholders that the time for fighting should be over and time for talking should begin. Dialogue is the only way through this. A peaceful coexistence between the communities and the political stakeholders in South Sudan remains essential. Related to that, we obviously called again for the release of political detainees, including the first vice president. We also raised some other concerns in that statement. Again, something we have seen which is of significant concern is restrictions on humanitarian access, notably in Upper Nile. And we've seen attacks on humanitarian workers in a number of states, including in terms of Central and Western Equatoria. All of that is a matter of serious concern. We remain committed to supporting South Sudan as the UK and as international partners. But the way to development has to come through peace. And unfortunately, the recent months have been going in the wrong direction.
Yes, some citizens wonder whether statements from international partners go far enough beyond raising concerns. What tangible steps can be taken by the UK and its partners to take or to encourage compliance with the peace agreement and also to ensure that civilians are protected throughout the country?
As a diplomat, my principal job is diplomacy. And so I and my colleagues engage with all the principal stakeholders in South Sudan to urge peace and to make the case for respect for the peace agreement and implementation thereof. That's not only a thing. That's not only a statement made by European Western partners. It's true of the region, it's true of the UN, it's true of the African Union, it's true of IGAD, it's true of the late Pope Francis, true of the UN Secretary General, and so forth. So our fervent hope is that the leaders of South Sudan listen to South Sudan's friends and partners. We continue to provide support, practical support, directly and through multilateral institutions, including, of course, the UN and UNMISS. UNMISS play an important role in trying to support peace in South Sudan, as do other institutions. So we continue to use every method that is at our disposal to encourage the parties to live up to their commitments, the commitments they signed up to, and also to respect the rights and the hopes of the people of South Sudan.
Yes, the UK government, together with other partners, have also continued to ask for the release of the first vice president, together with other political detainees who are being kept here in Juba. Why do you think this is having an implication on the peace process in this country?
Clearly, Riek Machar is the first vice president. He was the leader of the second most powerful party to the conflict and to the peace agreement. His name is written into the Araxes peace agreement. It is unrealistic to expect that his detention will not have a serious impact on the peace process. And the reality is that since March, we have seen the situation deteriorate further. So his detention have not solved problems. It's merely provoked additional problems.
You have just talked about the conflict which is happening throughout the country, and people are already talking about election in December 2026. That's just not far from now. And this interview you're having is just 1 week to the 8th anniversary of the signing of the RRCs. First of all, as a diplomat, what kind of support is the UK government putting forward in ensuring that we have a credible, free, fair election in this country in December? And do you believe, with this limited time, is it feasible to conduct an election in South Sudan come 2026, December?
As you say, we're 1 week out from the 8th anniversary, 1 week out from the anniversary of the further extension of the transition period. It's a matter of great disappointment to us, but I think more importantly to the people of South Sudan, that this past year has been wasted, frankly, that we've not seen progress towards, you know, proper implementation of the peace agreement, towards preparing the elections. We are, if anything, in a worse situation now than would have been a year ago in terms of, as I said, respect for the ceasefire. Peace is the fundamental requirement. There's also, it's important that there's civic space, that people feel free and able to express their political views, to engage politically, to engage in political gatherings and so forth. Freedom of media, likewise, extremely important if you're going to have free and democratic elections. The building up of the institutions, there's still fundamental questions which need to be answered about what kind of elections will be held, at what levels, how the system would work, how registration is going to take place, and so on. So there's a lot of work which needs to be done, but you have to start with return to the ceasefire, return to a political dialogue, because that's the only way that you're able to answer those kind of questions.
Yes, according to you as a diplomat, do you think these are the fundamental priorities right now for the parties and the political actors, the peace process, as we move towards election next year?
I hope so, because I think people, obviously I cannot speak for all of your listeners. I am new to South Sudan, I'm a foreigner, so there's much I need to learn, but those people who I have spoken to, I think, are tired of the repeated extensions of the transition period. So I think no one wants a further extension. Equally, they want a... I think the opinion polls suggest that a significant majority of South Sudanese want an opportunity to vote, to express their view democratically, to hold their leaders to account and so forth. So I sincerely hope that they will get that opportunity.
Ever since February, the fighting in Nasser County of Upper Nile State, most of the mechanisms has provided for in the RRCs of 2018 have not been functioning, including RGMEC, where you sit as a member representing the Troika. What is the best way for, at the moment now, for the political parties and all the other stakeholders to the agreement, given the fact that other signatories are behind bars and under house arrest? How does the country get out of this political stalemate we are in at the moment?
Through dialogue. That is the only solution. It is through speaking, talking, sitting down together with people who are your opponents, sometimes perhaps your enemies. Peace is made with your enemies, not your friends. And I realize that reconciliation, after what's happened in South Sudan, not only earlier this year, but over many years, including the worst years of the civil war, many terrible things happened. And I fully understand that it's hard for people to forgive. But the people of South Sudan have to live together. There is no other solution to that. And that requires being willing to release political detainees. It means stopping the unilateral decisions that we've seen over recent months, the appointment of people from one faction into positions which were allocated to the other faction in the peace agreement. It means accepting that the needs of the people of South Sudan must be paramount, and we as international partners, working closely with the region, the guarantors of this peace agreement, we are continually making that case. And I just, as I say to the leaders who I meet, I really hope that they will take on their responsibilities, think about their children, their grandchildren, what country they want to grow up in. Because, yes, ultimately, international partners can step away, but the people of South Sudan deserve to have a better future than they have seen over many years, including in the past months.
And the country is facing one of the worst humanitarian crises ever, with over 7 to 8 million South Sudanese are in dire needs of humanitarian assistance, displacement, food insecurity, flooding all over the country. What role is the UK government currently playing in addressing these humanitarian needs in the country, and what more do you believe can be done to help the people of South Sudan?
So our principal reason to be here as the British Embassy is to support the people of South Sudan in terms of peace and in terms of development, and it is the case that the UK has provided over £2 billion, so that's over 2.7 billion US dollars since independence. We continue to provide significant significant development support in our core areas. That is humanitarian assistance, that is in terms of education, particularly, but not only girls' education, and that's in terms of health care. We are announced earlier this year that we are providing this year £103 million worth of support. That's about nearly $140 million in those areas. So we are continuing to do what we can to support the people of South Sudan, who, as you say, are suffering from not only the displacement caused by conflict. We're very aware of the flooding which is taking place. We're aware of the impact of the war, the appalling war in Sudan, on South Sudan. South Sudan is another victim of the war in Sudan. We know that South Sudan has received more than, you know, more than 1.2 million people from Sudan, whether it's in terms of returnees and refugees. So we need to know that the needs are huge. But it's also important to understand that we can only complement, we cannot replace what the state, what the government of South Sudan does. As I say, the UK remains committed to South Sudan, but all of us as international partners are facing significant pressures on our aid budgets. There's, unfortunately, in the world, there are many other things going on. I mentioned Sudan, there's obviously Gaza, there's obviously Ukraine, there's many other, sadly, there's many other conflicts and humanitarian situations going on. So the pressures on our budgets are significant. And we need the South Sudan to take use its resources as effectively as possible, whether that's in terms of ensuring that medical facilities are properly staffed, that salaries are being paid, that medication is being provided across, you know, that's, across the range of governmental services. As I say, we have supported and we're extremely proud of what we have done to, for example, educate more than a million girls over time. We've vaccinated over 1.5 million children against deadly diseases and so on. We're very proud of the effort that we have made, but we need the government of South Sudan to do its bit as well. It cannot only be the responsibility of international partners, and that that means that the resources which South Sudan is receiving, and now that the oil pipeline pipelines have reopened earlier this year, there is revenue going into the state coffers. It's important that that revenue is used effectively to support the needs of the people of South Sudan.
Ambassador, thank you so much for speaking to Radio Maria. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Radio Maria for the service you provide. And thank you for this opportunity.
And that was the United Kingdom Ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador David Ashley, talking to us here on Radio Maria. And with that, we have come to the end of the first hour discussion of Nationwide. Join me after the news in English at 6 p.m. for the second hour of Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin. Stay tuned.